and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr, and thanks for taking time out of your schedule to be with us this week. Another segment on early detection and prevention of disease, generally speaking, but tonight we're going to specifically focus on the heart, and we have with us Dr. Stephen Sinatra. Thank you so much, Dr. Sinatra, for taking time out of your schedule to be with us.
Oh, it's great to be here, Eva. It's great to be here.
So before we get started, would you just tell everybody where they can find you? And give us a rundown. I know you have a handful of books out there, and tell people where they can find them and where they can find you.
Yeah, well, they can find me at heartmdinstitute.com. That's purely an informational website, and there's lots of video there and lots of teaching, lots of discovery. And then drsinatra.com has sort of the solutions to a lot of the inquiries or to the problems that people have in everyday life. Vitamins, minerals, nutraceuticals are on drsinatra.com. And as far as books, gosh, Eva, that's simple. I mean, there's the bookstores, there's Amazon.com, there's anything out there. So
it's all good. What are some of your books? You have a new cookbook out.
Yeah, I had the Great Cholesterol Myth Cookbook. We talked a lot about using healthy fats and, what they bring to your life. And then we have the Great Cholesterol Myth, which is really about the whole myth of cholesterol causing heart disease. I will say this, it does have a very small portion, but not as big as, the drug companies would like us to believe. And then I had the second edition of Earthing came out. That came out just recently. And that's good. I mean, that's been updated with a lot of new information, especially a lot of case studies and anecdotal reports. And we put a lot of the scientific research in the back of the book as well, because people wanted to find some of the earlier studies. And then there's reverse heart disease now, and metabolic cardiology, and the list goes. And one of my favorite books was Heartbreaking Heart Disease. I mean, that's one of my best books. And, that's still up there on Amazon.com and Healing Kitchen and Sugar Shock and, all that stuff.
They're fabulous. I know they are because they helped save my life. They're fabulous.
Oh, well, thank you.
They really are. So to get started right now, let's talk about, from your perspective, we've had a segment. We had Amy Yatsko talk about genetics and methylation. Then we had Jerry Tennant talk about energy and voltage. Then we had Astrotech Labs talk about laboratories. And now we have you talk about early detection and prevention from your perspective. Where would you start for somebody at home that's trying to figure out if they have disease or prevent disease that's already coming? Where would you start?
Where would you start? Well,
how
a
would
lot
they
of
know they have something coming? And then what are your steps that you would start? And I imagine you might go to your fabulous four, or I don't know.
You mean the awesome foursome?
Well, yeah.
If you really poll people about, healthy living, the word energy comes up. And if they're being a doctor for more than 40 years, I would say that when people feel a lot of fatigue, a lot of disinterest, not depression, but basically they just feel like their life is getting slower and slower, especially in regards to the energetic components. I find that as an early sign that something is wrong. And if you look at older people, Eva, older people who are like getting older and older, and their locomotor abilities go down, and they're very slow in their steps, and they sleep a lot, well, it's almost like they're planning to go to the other side, in a way. So I think energy, from the cardiovascular point of view, is really important. And I will tell you this. People with heart disease, heart failure especially, or diastolic dysfunction of the heart, which it tends to run in more females than males, and usually the shortness of breath is an early symptom, as well as fatigue and weakness. But I'll tell you, I would say that when people lose the energetic balance in their step, or their just enthusiasm for just, you know, looking at each day and looking at each day with excitement and enthusiasm, when they start to lose that and when they feel like fatigue is really getting worse and worse, that's an early sign that the body is out of balance. And that's something that people should think, oh, I'm not just getting older, but, you know, something is wrong with the energetic consideration of the body. So I would say that's probably the earliest suggestion.
So if that's the case, if their energy is leaving, what is the first step that they do next?
Well, I mean,
got to start somewhere.
You got to start somewhere. I mean, first of all, I mean, people go to doctors for all sorts of reasons. I mean, one of them is energy. Another thing that bothers me about people getting sick is that they lose disinterest in eating. They lose a disinterest in food, and that happens usually later on in life as well. I know when my mom, when she was in her early 80s and was blind with diabetes and osteoporosis and cancer, she just stopped eating. And basically it was a situation where she didn't want to go anymore. So, when people don't suddenly just show up in a doctor's office, they usually have something going on. And some of the earliest symptoms that I would see would be weakness, fatigue, insomnia or poor sleep is another one that when people can't sleep through the night, that tends to be a red flag. Other situations where autonomic instability occurs, where headache is a factor, lightheadedness, dizziness, imbalance situations, I would see a lot of that. That can occur basically from a lot of the electromagnetics in the environment, where we get autonomic hyperactivity, where the autonomic nervous system is jacked up, and people tend to be on alert, and the autonomic nervous system and this parasympathetic nervous system are out of balance. That's why earthing and grounding is so important, because it'll tend to balance, you know, both those nervous systems. So again, it comes back to disequilibrium. When a body is out of balance, emotionally, spiritually, and physically, then disease sets in. So it's really about balancing the body's field, and that's why I'm such a strong believer in vibrational medicine.
Me too, by the way, me too. So let's go into some things that are wrong. Let's say if somebody has thick blood, is there something they can do? They go to their doctor and their doctor goes, oh my goodness, we need to put you on a blood thinner. Is there something else they can do? Or if they go to their doctor and their doctor says, oh, your cholesterol level ratios are terrible, is there something they can do?
Oh yeah, I mean, that's there's always something you can do, whether you do the right thing or not. Yeah, I mean, there's always something you can do. I mean, thick blood is a problem. Now, people don't come into the doctor's office and say they have thick blood. But thick blood is really the sine qua non of inflammation. And again, they don't come into a doctor's office, oh, I have inflammation. I mean, they can come in with, you know, any symptoms, anything from headache to fatigue to high blood pressure. Their lipids may be out of whack. I mean, thick blood, or when the blood is like red ketchup, to me is really a sign of illness. The problem is a lot of us have that, and we have it not only because of our processed diet and the sugar. I mean, the average person in America takes in about 160 pounds of sugar, but one of the reasons why our blood is so thick and so sludgy is because of the electromagnetics in the environment. The Wi-Fi, the cell phone towers, cordless phones, cellular phone, computers, I mean, this radio frequency, what I learned is it actually thickens the blood. And that's why grounding is another good antidote, because it thins the blood. So, again, thick blood is something that I do worry about. This is one thing in diabetics that I think is very crucial, because one of the reasons why diabetics have to be very careful about foot care is if they ever get like a cut in their foot and it doesn't heal, and because of circulation in the distal extremities are so compromised that infection can set in easily. And when you have a compromised circulatory system in like the distal digits of your fingers or your feet, if infection does set in, then it could be very hard to eradicate, because the blood supply is poor to begin with. And again, we've seen patients with diabetic sores and ulcers, even very cold extremities, do so well with earthing and grounding, because, again, what we found in our experiments is that when people do put their bare feet on the ground or sleep grounded or use pads, the blood velocity, or the velocity between red blood cells, increases. We call it the zeta potential. And when that happens, the blood becomes more like red wine. And that's a very, very good thing, because when your blood's more like red wine, you literally develop more oxygen to the tissues. And when you do that, you drive the energy in the preferential direction. Because any energy in a body requires oxygen. You need oxygen. Now, that's why hyperbaric oxygen chambers are so good, you know, for people with Lyme disease or with stroke or any of the, or even cancer for that matter, because you're driving oxygen into the cell. And when you do that, you increase the voltage of a cell. And when you do that, you optimize the cell where it becomes more optimal as opposed to more diseased.
Now that you've raised that topic up, what do you think about ozone? Do you worry about free radicals? How do you know if it's safe to use it or not?
Well, ozone can be a double-edged sword. I mean, hey, look, the best ozone is when you go outside after a thunderstorm, and there's a lot of lightning strikes, and you smell that nice pungent odor. That's a healthy ozone. I like that. I mean, I think putting your bare foot on the ground after a thunderstorm and smelling that ozone is wonderful, because the ground is highly charged, and there's lots of free electrons, and they'll be helpful to the body. Would I recommend that you would use ozone filters in your home and try to increase more ozone? That, to me, can be a little bit of an overdose, where ozone in small amounts can be really good, but in higher amounts you get a free radical situation or an oxidative stress situation. However, I mean, one of the best treatments of cancer, they'll be using high-dose vitamin C, hydrogen peroxide, even ozone, where, again, at a certain level, these treatments can be very good. But if you overdose on these treatments, they can have a downside. And it's like anything else in medicine. You can take vitamin E, for example, mixed tocopherols or alpha tocopherol succinate. But if you take high doses, you could get a prooxidant effect of the high dose. So in medicine or in it's all about balance, Eva. And when it comes to ozone, I really believe that less is more.
Okay. That's a very good to know. So let's go back to your earthing for a minute, because you've mentioned that word two or three times, and some people may not know what you're talking about when you say earthing. What is that?
Well, what earthing is that you're putting your feet on the ground, and, excuse me, oh, I have to sneeze. I'm up here in the allergies in Connecticut right now. I can't believe it. Anyway, when you put your bare feet on the ground, we have to realize that the earth is struck by lightning thousands of times a minute, particularly around the equator. And this really increases the amount of electrical potential of the earth. And when the earth is endowed with all these electrons, it develops an energy called the Schumann energy. And the Schumann energy is what we call 7.83 hertz. And it's a vibratory type of energy. Actually, in the first Grounded movie that came out, And it could be on YouTube. It's called The Grounded. It actually shows the vibrating quality of the earth. Now, some people who are really in touch with their bodies can feel it. If they walk barefoot early in the morning when the grass is kind of wet, some people can feel that very subtle energy. And it's absorbed through what we call a K1 point of the feet. It's a very powerful acupuncture point. And it connects meridians all through the backbone into the skull and around to the roof of the mouth or the back of the tongue. So when people do earth and they put their bare feet on the ground, you get a surge of electrons through the acupuncture point of the K1 point of the body. And when you take in these electrons, what it's doing basically, it's not only tying up free radicals and reducing oxidative stress or putting the fires of inflammation out, it's regulating the autonomic nervous system. In other words, we get a balance of what we call an increase in parasympathetic activity. And what this does, it supports heart rate variability. And that's where I come in as a cardiologist, because whenever you balance the autonomic nervous system, this is supportive of what we call heart rate variability, because the heart is under the heart rate is under the effect of the vagus system or the vagus nerve. So I know it's a lot of complex physiology, but the long and short of it is that when you do earth or do ground, you're inducing favorable physiological and biochemical properties into the body. And one of the things that your listeners have to realize is that when it comes to health, there are very, very simple cures. I call them God's simple cures. They're very, very simple, and earthing is one of them.
So I have two things. Two questions here. One, I want you to tell us, is there a way we can do that at home? But secondly, I had a woman contact me yesterday because she knew that you were coming on my show and that we'd probably be talking about earthing. And she said, I bought this earthing sheet, and instead of making me feel better, it made me have anxiety. So I went to my naturopath, and my naturopath told me that my polarities, this woman has the most incredible anxiety of anybody I've ever seen. And she said, my naturopath told me that because of all this anxiety that I have, that my polarities had reversed. In other words, when she muscle tests, instead of muscle testing the way on her right hand for yes or no, it's turned around and now it's her left hand. I don't know if that makes any sense. But
Is that true?
Does that
happen? It is. That's one of the reasons why I like the electroceutical NES system, Nutri Energetic Systems, because they have an infraceutical that works on polarity, which is very important. Anybody flying in an airplane, for example, who flies cross-country, their polarity can be disturbed. And bringing the body into balance with polarity is very, very important.
So
but,
I've never heard of that system. What was that system?
Capital NES.
What does it do?
It's a type of electroceutical. It's electrodermal testing that really you put your hand on a device and it measures the frequency and the vibrations of your body. But one of the things that their researchers have really looked at was polarity. It's very hard to heal when your polarity is reversed in the body. And that's why a lot of people have what we call geopathic stress, you know, stress from a full moon, for example, or stress from satellites or, high radar systems or something, you know, in the atmosphere. So basically, you know, people are sensitive to that kind of stuff. But getting back to the person who is grounding, sometimes with grounding, when people have issues, and I've seen this a lot, especially with Lyme disease.
She does have Lyme disease.
Yeah. With Lyme disease, people will get a Herx reaction many times because the Lyme parasite does not like the natural earth energy. And it sort of makes the Lyme parasite a little bit disturbed or, quote, angry. And when people earth, if they have an unsettling reaction, it could be a detox reaction. I've seen people, even myself, when I started the Earth, I was getting cramps in my legs, and I stuck with it, drank a lot of fluids, and I realized it was a detox reaction. Because remember, the body always gets, when the body's trying to heal itself, it always gets worse before it gets better, because it needs to open up its channels. So it does get worse, and basically, I would say that woman probably had a detox reaction, and I would recommend that she just walk barefoot, maybe a half hour to an hour a day, increase it a little bit more. Maybe you asked me the question in your own home. I mean, if people have basements in their homes and it's cold outside, they can go on the concrete floor, put their feet. If they have a slate floor, let's say, or a tile floor in their kitchen, and that's on concrete, they'll be grounded. If they even touch the metalware on the sink, they'll be grounded. If they have a fireplace, for example, and it's brick and it has a hearth on it, you can put your bare skin on the hearth or put your hands on brick or stone, and you'll be grounded. So I would recommend that she try taking grounding in small doses, and then eventually, if she gets a grounded sheet, she can try 2-3 hours on it, and then even more. But I would take it in baby steps as opposed to giant steps, and I think she'll show a significant improvement.
Okay. So let's talk about when I had my heart attack a few years ago. I did your Fabulous Four and a lot of things that you tell me.
Metabolic cardiology.
Your octopus oil. Your calamari oil. I did that, and I'd like for you to talk a minute about some people say that DHA is inflammatory, so some people are afraid to use it. I'd like to hear what you have to say about that, and is that the oil that you prefer? And then I'd like for you to tell everybody about your Fabulous Four, because that radically improved my life. It improved my muscle tone. I went from being kind of flabby to having some muscle mass. I could breathe. We have 3 acres up in the mountains, and I tend all of the property by myself. I mean, it gave me a quality of life that was better, actually, than before my heart attack.
Well, yeah. I mean, see, whenever you bring energy substrates to the table, and we're doing a full circle about how I started this on energy, one of the reasons the heart suffers when there's anything from, let's say, long-standing high blood pressure where the heart grows in size, we call that left ventricular hypertrophy, or a heart attack or a bypass or a stent or even bypass surgery. When you have these insults to the heart, the heart struggles to make endogenous energy in the body. Remember that we're always making ATP. We need ATP to survive. Adenosine triphosphate, and it's made in the mitochondria, the sort of the furnaces or the powerhouses of our cells. Now, in the heart, the average cell has about 3,500 to 5,000 mitochondria, as opposed to a biceps or your triceps or a muscle in your body has 200 mitochondria per cell. So the heart is a very, very dynamic organ. It requires enormous amounts of energy. And whenever you have a cardiac insult, the energy substrates generally cannot be produced by the body quick enough because they're used up so fast. And what metabolic cardiology does, and the reason why you felt so good working on your 3 acres, when you take ribose and coenzyme Q10 and carnitine and magnesium, what you're doing is you're driving energy in the preferential direction, so that now you're developing more energy substrates in the heart, so the heart can make more ATP. When it makes more energy, the cells tend to dance more, they tend to be more vibrational, more invigorated, and when that happens, you feel better. So, I mean, metabolic cardiology has been a great discovery of mine, and it took me about 30 years to really put the puzzle together, but once I put it together, it's made a difference in tens of thousands of people's lives because, again, it's all about energy and it's all about voltage. And I'm sure Dr. Tennant probably told your listeners about, the higher the voltage in cells, the more the cells respond. and it requires a lot of voltage in cells to really keep our the human machinery going. And remember that the human machine produces an enormous amount of toxic waste in the process. So not only do we have to generate energy, but we have to get waste products out at the same time, and that requires additional energy as well. And while I'm on it, even the body temperature, even trying to keep our body temperature at 98.6 requires an enormous amount of energy. And again, that requires ATP. You mentioned this earlier, you know, people don't realize it, but when people start to get cold, when the body temperature goes down and they go to a doctor's office and they say, you know, I'm just cold all the time, or I took my body temperature, it's 97, it's 97.4, it's 96.7, something like that. It's below 98.8. Your doctor is going to say, well, I'll check you for thyroid, which is fine, that's fine. They'll check the endocrine system. But it's more than that. Once the body temperature goes down, to me, Eva, that's one of the earliest signs that the body is way out of balance and the body is struggling to make energy. And that's one of the early signs that something is going on that could eventually turn into, quote, disease or pathology. So body temperature is very, very important.
So is that, would you do those things that you just talked about for that? Because I happen to know somebody that actually complains about that all the time. You'll be in the room with this person, and everybody in there is burning up, but this person's freezing. And they appear to be healthy. So is that what you would do? Tell them to start with your Fabulous Four? If everything else is checked out and they just run low thyroid all the time?
Yeah, I mean, if the thyroid checks out, and remember, you know, change of life, andropause in the male, menopause in the female, you know, these hormonal swings can cause changes in body temperature. They can make you hotter, make you colder. Once we rule those things out and we rule out thyroid, sure, I mean, and any person who feels like they're cold all the time, again, that could be a sign that something's going on with the body. I would certainly suggest the Awesome Foursome. I mean, I would suggest coenzyme Q10, magnesium, ribose, and carnitine, because that will help drive energy. That'll stoke up the mitochondrial furnaces of the body, where the body will produce more energy. And when the body does that, heat is produced because it requires ATP to drive up body temperature. And when that happens, generally people do feel better.
That makes a lot of sense. I don't normally do questions for my listeners just because my guests usually have so much to say, but I have a question here that I find kind of interesting, so I'm going to ask you. Maybe you can help this woman. Dear Dr. Sinatra, the pharmaceutical heart drugs, and she lists some, and blood pressure meds cause platelets to go down. Her father, who's 87 and is active doing Qigong and yoga and other yard work and stuff, his platelets dropped 60 points before normal. I don't know quite what she means by that statement, but she wants to know, is there any guesses why those platelets dropped? Could it be Coumadin? He lives in Long Island. Could you recommend a doctor who would understand meds the natural way?
Well, it's a tough question because I mean, first of all, when you're that old, the bone marrow could get tired, and constituents of the bone marrow like platelets could fall. Certain drugs can have an effect on the bone marrow. It's a hard question, but I would say this: whenever medications are incriminated in causing reactions in the body, and by the way, medications cause enormous reactions in the body. I always tell my patients, if you can get by without a medication, do it. If you must take a medication because of a quality of life issue, that's okay. But remember, pharmaceutical drugs come along with a lot of excess baggage. So I would tell this woman to tell her father that if the platelets are falling, they need to go to the doctor and to see if any of the drugs can be incriminated. And if they are, what they need to do is go on less pharmaceutical drug or change the drug, because you don't want to get into a situation where the body can't compensate, and now you've created a new disease in the body as a result of a possible drug interaction. So it's just important to realize that when people take a lot of pharmaceutical drugs, and by the way, the average person over 65, now they say it's like a third of people over 65 take pharmaceutical drugs. I mean, that's a very, very bad statistic, especially when you're talking about anti-aging. I mean, that's the one area you don't want to get into is pharmaceutical drugs if you don't have to.
I would not be surprised if we didn't have 60% of people cross the board on some kind of pharmaceutical, to be honest.
Yeah, I even read an article just yesterday about Tylenol being incriminated in pregnant mothers, producing a lot of autistic spectrum disorders in kids. I mean, and Tylenol is a drug that can cause a lot of liver dysfunction, but yet, you know, it's probably the only alternative to aspirin and non-steroidals. So I would tell people all the time, if you can get by without any drugs at all, just try to do it. Even aspirin.
Before we leave this woman's question, she asked if you knew anybody in Long Island that did natural medicine from a holistic perspective.
Dr. Vagnini, he was a thoracic surgeon. He switched over into alternative medicine. He's in Westbury, I think, in Westbury, Long Island. I mean, he's a decent guy. I mean, one of his big specialties is metabolic syndrome. He has a good understanding of metabolic syndrome. He could be a place to start, but I just don't know anybody on life. I used to live there, but I just don't know anybody there that's practicing other than Fred Vagnini, Vagnani.
Okay. So.
Oh, Ron Hoffman might be good. He's not a cardiologist, but Ron Hoffman does a good job in New York City.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you for taking time to do that. So I don't know if you want to go here or not, because I'm going to give you time to talk about your new research, any new information that you know. But do you want to talk about MTHFR and folate and B12, since we know we have an epidemic in that right now in our country?
Well, you had Amy on. I mean, she probably knows more about that than I do, but I'll tell you this. I mean, I just feel that the folic acids that people are using today, the regular folate and the regular B12s, and I've been formulating vitamins ever since 1990. I have changed my electrolyte formula to MTHR and to methylcobalamin 2 years ago, and I put together a brain defense with tocumin, which is broad-spectrum tocotrienols, and I added MTHR and methylcobalamin, and even on my Omega-Q+, you know, my flagship product, I'm getting the manufacturers to take out the folic acid and the cobalamin and to switch them with a highly more bioavailable MTHFR and methylcobalamin and P5P, pyridoxal 5-phosphate. I just believe that people today are getting, because of the environment, because of all the inborn errors of metabolism that are just creeping up, a lot of it has to do with epigenetics, I believe, which is really, it's a situation like this, Eva. Why does one person with Lyme disease have a breeze with it, and another person is devastated? You know, a lot of it has to do with what they're taking in their diet, what their genetics are, what their toxins are in their body at the same time. So epigenetics is sort of the environmental factor that selects out the genetics. So let's say you live in Quebec and you have a definite genetic problem with methylation. And about a third to 50%, I even heard as much as two-thirds of the people that live in Quebec, Canada, you know, have problems with folic acid and methylation. That's clearly genetic. But what about people who are borderline? Then all of a sudden, the environment has made it worse, and the usual folic acids can't do anything. They become ineffective. They're not even, and now they become like antigens in the body, where the body looks at them in a way, instead of being a support, it becomes sort of an enemy. This is what's happening today, and we need to really be more aggressive in selecting out B vitamins that are highly bioavailable, they can cross the blood-brain barrier, and they can ease the brain inflammation that all of us have. So even though they're much more expensive to use, I just feel that we really need to use MTHFR, methylcobalamin, and P5P as standards now, as opposed to only using them in people with genetic deficiencies. I think it should be the standard of care.
So let me ask you this question. If you don't know that, it's quite okay. I don't know, and we'll just move on. But I'm going to tell you something that I figured out in my own life that I would like my listeners to know, and even you. You know, I have double MTHFR mutations. So, and I was doing oral methylcobalamin and folinic acid. And I started getting like numbness and tingling in my toes and fingers and the worst anxiety that you could ever imagine. I mean, I actually broke down in tears at the grocery store one day just because there was too many people in there, just too much of it.
Yeah.
And I finally figured out that even though I was taking in plenty of methylcobalamin, I must have, my mutation must be bad enough that I still can't even get in the methylated B12. So I started giving myself shots. And as soon as I gave myself that first methylcobalamin shot, I felt this peace of mind and stability. And so I gave one to my daughter. My daughter said, you know, my daughter was raped a few years ago, and she said, she's got MTHFR, and she said, Mom, when you gave me that shot of B12, even though she had been taking methylated B12 orally, she said, that was why I started using street drugs. That was the high that I was looking for, that I was trying to get with the street drugs, and all I really needed was the B12. She's not doing that. We cured her with nutrition, but she said that one thing about B12, when I used heroin, that's what I was looking for.
Wow.
I was looking for that, some kind of mental calmness. She could sleep. Her muscles stopped cramping. Her mind got still and clear. So I think there's even something about people who have that broken gene that still can't use oral methylcobalamin. Does that make any sense to you?
Oh, it does make sense. Yeah, it does make sense. And
people don't know this, you know.
Yeah.
They think, well, I'm taking it, that good enough, but it's not.
No, and some people, the parental route is a lot better. It's no question. But remember, folinic acid that you were taking, that's more bioavailable than folate, but it's not nearly as bioavailable as MTHFR. I mean, MTHFR.
You mean 5-MTHF?
Yeah. One?
Okay.
Methyl tetrahydrofolate. Actually, I think it sells for about $10,000 a kilo. I think folinic acid sells for about $2,000 a kilo, and folic acid is about $400 a kilo. I used to use folinic acid in my vitamins 10, 15, 20 years ago, and because it was a much more bioavailable form of folate, it's better. But when you have that recessive, you really got to go to that MTHFR.
So now I have another question. I have heard from some sources that if you have 5-MTHF in this country, that it's really only a mirror image. I have no idea. Do you know that? And how do we know if we're getting true 5-MTHF?
Well,
how do we know that?
I mean, it's pretty expensive, I'll tell you that. I mean,
okay. So we have to, if we're paying a lot,
actually,
it's probably
Merck, I think Merck Pharmaceuticals has a patent on it, it's almost like a drug. I mean, when doctors write for it, It's like 5 milligrams, basically, and it's pretty powerful stuff. But again, all these inborn errors of metabolism that you're talking about, I think, is one of the major factors why we have so much, you know, autistic spectrum disorder on in our society today. Because these children, and you talk about your daughter, they're really compromised. A lot of these kids, and basically, they need, you know, dimethylglycine, trimethylglycine. They need MTHFR. They need methylcobalamin. I mean, they need the creme of the creme of any oral agents. They need iodine. They need zinc, just to get the wiring right in the brain. And you know, unfortunately, a lot of these kids, the parents unknowingly are trying to take care of them, and you know, and they'll give them good foods, but some of the foods have too many polyphenols, like blueberries or apples, or and that can make the wiring worse. Like almonds can do it, honey can do it. So when you're working with trying to get the wiring of the brain correct, it takes a lot of dissection. And your daughter was lucky to learn that a B12 shot was her answer. I mean, that's a happy ending to that story.
It blew me away. I mean, this was just 3 weeks ago. I mean, we got her well about 3.5 years ago, but 2 or 3 weeks ago, I gave her this shot. She went, "Mom, this is what I've been looking for."
Yeah.
And all it was a B12 shot.
Amy would know more about that than me. I would ask Amy about that. I mean, that's what her reputation is.
I just think physicians should know if their patients are taking oral methylcobalamin and they're getting tingling and anxiety, maybe they should try the injection. But, you know, I don't know.
Well, in your case, you had a nice, you know, result. So it's worthwhile to consider that, sure.
So you just talked about something that I didn't know. If you don't mind, I'd like to know more about it. You talked about the polyphenols and the fruits. What were you talking about? I didn't know about that.
Yeah, excuse me. I mean, what I was saying is this whole aspect of autistic spectrum disorder has me really concerned as a doctor. It's just rampant in our society, and nobody's doing anything about it. I mean, it's just awful. These parents, they don't know what to do. Why do we have this alarming increase in autistic spectrum disorder? You know, it's definitely a mitochondrial problem. It's like an energetic problem. And if we look at it, I mean, it's almost like the perfect storm. We have a lot of electromagnetics in the environment that opens up the blood-brain barrier. A lot of these kids have gotten vaccinations. I only had 5 when I was a kid. Now these kids are getting close to 50. There's a lot of chemicals in the environment, phthalates, you know, insecticides, pesticides, heavy metals, mercury, lead. So, and with the electromagnetics, what happens is that the wiring of the brain is just misaligned. And then the polyphenols, I mean, some kids will react with apples and blueberries and have a negative reaction because they don't have the machinery or the enzyme systems to metabolize these components in the brain. So when you put these kids on a casein-free, gluten-free, polyphenol-free, in other words, you got to choose certain foods. And this is what I was talked about with epigenetics, where you have to look at the environment and look at what genes you have and see what foods can either help or hurt. And that's why when you're dealing with autistic spectrum disorder, and believe me, I'm not an expert on this. I'm just trying to, you know, I just have enormous compassion for these parents because they just don't know what to do. But when you look at that, you need to take, you know, the casein and the dairy out. The gluten needs to come out. Any food colorings, dyes, yellow dye 10, blue dye 5, you know, they just need to come out. Sugar needs to come out, polyphenols out, and then you need to put things in, you know, where I think beets and broccoli, which have a lot of methylators in them, would help these kids. And the same thing is true of, you know, any of the foods that can downregulate inflammation, like coconut, for example, olive oil. I mean, one of the greatest things I've learned about olive oil in the last year or so is that it's always been the secret sauce of the Mediterranean diet. It's always been the elixir of youth, but I never understood why until I realized that this one study came out that showed that olive oil, extra virgin, 100%, I'm putting about 100% now, extra virgin olive oil, literally can downregulate pro-inflammatory genes. So that's one of the reasons why we've seen so much greater good come out of using olive oil. And we talked about the beginning of the program. I mean, these people who were taking, let's say, 4 tablespoons of olive oil over a 5-year period per day, this is per day, that's a lot of olive oil. That's like over, 500 calories in olive oil per day. These people had less stroke, less heart disease, less depression, less Alzheimer's, less diabetes, less weight gain. And it makes sense because when you look at all the good phytonutrients in olive oil is one thing, but when you realize that epigenetically it's downregulating pro-inflammatory genes, that's pretty cool. And that's why, you know, people do better taking olive oil as opposed to, let's say, an inflammatory oil like canola oil or corn oil or something like that.
And I'm curious, was that study, where did those people live? Was that native to their country, or was that just kind of like a broad spectrum study?
Well, the PREDIMED study, the one that was in the New England Journal this past June, a year ago, that came out of Spain. That was an extension of the Mediterranean diet. And their lead author, he was on my panel at the American College of Nutrition meeting in San Diego. And he and I have conversed several times since then. We wrote a paper together. And I was really astonished when I heard how vital olive oil really was. The same thing is true of nuts, Eva. I mean, nuts contain a lot of healthy fat, and nuts was as equal as olive oil in this 5-year study as well. So people who ate 2 handfuls of nuts, mixed nuts a day, like walnuts, pistachios, macadamia nuts, again, the nuts did something to the body that induced health. And it's a perfect example because the Seventh-day Adventist is one population in the United States, for example, where they're vegetarian, but nuts is a big part of the diet, and they have a very, very low incidence of cardiovascular disease. So it does make sense to me. And again, this is why certain foods, they can be superfoods, but when people include them in the diet or take out some of the bad foods, it's really important when we're really dealing with anybody that's out of balance, like an autistic spectrum disorder or a chronic illness or anything for that matter.
So we've got about 7 minutes. Could you talk just a few minutes about particle size?
You mean LDL?
Yes.
Yeah. The most important thing when it comes to cholesterol is, first of all, if it's oxidized, we have a problem. If it's not oxidized, who cares? And you can measure oxidized LDL, but, I mean, generally speaking, one of the things that can oxidize cholesterol, well, mercury can, cigarette smoke can, insecticides, pesticides. I mean, certainly a severe emotional stress can be a factor. But assuming that the cholesterol is just cholesterol and it's native LDL, it's harmless. Now, there's small particles and there's large particles and there's intermediate particles. There's particle A, there's particle B, and there's particle AB. And people can get those particles assessed by what we call fractionization of cholesterol. They can get an NMR test or a VAP test or an LPP profile. I mean, it's almost like alphabet soup, but there's so many different programs out there and lab tests you can get. But the long and short of it is this. The worst cholesterol profile I have is LP little a. That's the part, that profile bothers me the most because that is a very inflammatory particle. And that's the real cholesterol story. Now, LP little a is usually genetically induced. There are good things to neutralize it. I love lumbrokinase. Nattokinase works, but lumbrokinase works the best. There's an outfit in Canada, and it goes by the name Bolouke, B-O-L-U-O-K-E. They've done some nice research showing that LP little A can be lowered by lumbrokinase. And the other things that can influence LP little A is niacin and certainly omega-3 essential fatty acids. They can help neutralize the toxic effects of LP little A. And then it's bioidentical hormones. Men who are short on testosterone with high LP little A will improve with testosterone. Women will improve with bioidentical estrogen who have high LP little A. Estrogen levels, I mean, LP little A levels will be driven down by bioidentical estrogen or estriol. So there's lots of ways we can treat LP little A, but that's the one particle size that sort of I get concerned about when I see very high levels of LP little A. Now, particle number is also important. We don't want to have a lot of little particles, like over 1,000. So if we have a lot of particles and they're pro-inflammatory, and if you're a male with coronary disease, well, then I would recommend a statin. I do recommend statins to any male, actually any male with coronary disease, regardless of the cholesterol. If you're a woman, I'm not so enthusiastic on statins, unless you're a woman who has a very inflammatory cholesterol profile. I would rather use lumbrokinase for LP little A because sometimes statins can raise LP little A in some people. I would much rather use statins in men. Women tend to get much more side effects, and I really haven't seen statins really beneficial in women. Certainly not for any woman for just a high cholesterol number. I think that's very, very poor medicine. I'm talking about women with advanced coronary disease. My choice of using statins really depends on, you know, looking at the whole cholesterol profile. Remember that the triglycerides are very important. I like to see low triglycerides. The lower, the better. I like to see a higher HDL. I worry about metabolic syndrome, which is highly inflammatory, where we get higher hemoglobin A1Cs, higher blood sugar, higher triglycerides, lower HDLs. I don't like to see too much VLDL3. That's an inflammatory triglyceride particle. And all these can be determined with either a VAP test or an NMR or an LPP. And it just brings a lot more science to the table. So there's a lot of good things you can do in a diet, though. We talked about omega-3s. Remember, saturated fats, healthy saturated fats, particularly coconut, avocado, which is more monounsaturated, olive oil, which is an omega-9, and which is more of a monounsaturated but does have some saturated activity. When you bring healthy fats to the table, even like organic butter, I have no problem with that. But healthy fats will turn LDL from smaller particle to higher particle size. So you'll take a type B or a type AB, and you'll make it into an A. And remember, saturated fats will also improve HDL as well. So this is the story again of epigenetics, where you're dealing with somebody who has genetic weaknesses, but now can you use foods in the environment that can turn that around? And of course you can.
Is ghee a good thing? Or
yeah, I like ghee. Ghee is good. Yeah, ghee is it's a butter that has been boiled and. When I did an Ayurvedic program in Albuquerque, New Mexico, I spent a whole week eating ghee and khichdi and stuff like that. No, ghee is fine. I have no problem. In fact, it's in my refrigerator. I have ghee. I like ghee.
I had an experience with that. I had finally gotten my particle. I mean, my labs came back perfect.
Oh, really? Good. Good.
But that was in January. And then I let this friend of mine tell me that I should use ghee. She did Ayurvedic medicine, and so maybe this was the problem. I started ladling it in everything I ate, my lentils, my anything.
Too much.
I mean, I was ladling it, and I got my VAP test back about 6 weeks ago, and my triglycerides were 450. The good thing was I had no inflammation.
Yeah, let me see, reactive protein was down, or the particle size was higher?
The particle size was higher.
So you went from a B to an A, so to speak?
I went from an AB back to a V?
You mean back to an A?
Okay, back to an A, to the to the small. I was almost to the big puffy ones, and I went from that back to the little ones. But, I mean, I was ladling it in. Would that have done that? Because I eat a pretty perfect diet. I only eat grass-fed meats. I only eat organic
meat. I mean, just remember, you don't want to overdose on anything. It's all about balance. It's
well,
all about balance.
I did overdose on it.
you just can't. You know, even the good stuff. I mean, the only thing I see people overdose on, and they're still pretty healthy, is olive oil. That's the only thing I've ever seen. Where even doctors who take a lot of olive oil, it's amazing what they're telling me. So that's the only thing that I've seen. But I still wouldn't be drinking olive oil by the cupful. I've no more than 4 tablespoons a day.
Thank you, Dr. Sinatra. As usual, you're fabulous.
Oh,
and
thanks.
Thank
you, Eva. All right,
have
great. It was a lot of fun.
Have a good evening. And
you too now.
Come back
God
soon.
Bless. Bye-bye.
Good night.